The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Tom Fairbanks. Tom's engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. And together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Friday, March 9th. 2018. The program will re-air Saturday morning at 7 here on KVOI. And we don't have to worry, Tom, about setting our clocks back or ahead. No, spring ahead, fall back. So we don't have to worry about that. Arizona does not do that, except the Navajo Nation does.
That's true. And there's news that Florida wants to have daylight savings time year-round. I don't know why, but
wonder where they got the idea.
I don't.
Anyway, we are live during the week here on AM 1030, during the noon hour on AM 1030 KVOI. We've got our podcast. We have the live stream of the program at buckmastershow.com, kvoi.com. Our media partners, thank you to Dylan Smith and the TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, the Tucson Media Group, which includes Tucson Weekly and Inside Tucson Business. Joining us for our Friday Focus interview, Sheriff of Pima County, Mark Napier. How are you, Sheriff?
I'm very well, Bill. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you for asking. Dan Shear is here, editor of the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks.
Oh, so much to talk about with the sheriff today, who spent part of the week up in Las Vegas at the Western Sheriffs Association meeting. What was the, I know the Las Vegas shooting was one of the topics. Were there some things that folks didn't hear about in that shooting?
Well, a lot of things. Nobody's ever prepared to have nearly 60 people killed at a single event. The sheriff, in addition to all the other things that he had to deal with, he had one of his officers who was off duty at the venue killed on site, which is a whole nother dynamic in that, and had another on-duty officer seriously shot. But you had a very, very complex scene, a very determined perpetrator in the Mr. Paddock, very determined. Most people don't know that he still had 5,000 rounds of ammunition in the room.
Whoa.
He was there for the long haul. An extensive amount of planning that he did prior to the act. And then just the overwhelming nature, I mean, completely overwhelmed Las Vegas Metro, because they had all these peripheral calls that happened, and many of the victims were on the scene that were deceased, but they also had these people that self-transported to 13 different hospitals. So for a long time, they didn't even know where all their victims were.
And people were literally dying in the streets.
Literally.
They were running from the scene.
Yeah, they knew they were in danger, and because of adrenaline and maybe alcohol, they ran from the scene, and there were four or five, maybe even as many as six people that died blocks away, literally fell in the street. So they had all these satellite scenes of people that were deceased.
Talk about chaos.
And
the shooter was trying to blow up some of the fuel tanks at McCarran International Airport.
He actually hit them. The nature of jet fuel didn't allow it to explode, but that was his intent, is to take incendiary ammunition and hit those fuel tanks in an effort to get those to explode. But he was there for the long haul. He set up cameras looking down the hallway to see the law enforcement. They're confident he was a single lone actor. There were no other people involved. They still don't have any idea what his motivation was, despite what you've heard in the news. I've actually been briefed on this twice now, once by Sheriff Lombardo himself at major county sheriffs in D.C., and then by a deputy chief just yesterday. Just a very, very complex scene.
And I was just going to say, for us here in Pima County, God forbid, these kind of things could happen anywhere. So you've got to be prepared for a mass shooting here.
Well, you have to be prepared, Bill, but I think the other thing that's a challenge for law enforcement executives is to hear from other people who've been involved in it. What did you learn? What would you do differently? If you could rewind it, what would you do? And the sheriff specifically had some lesson learned about how he interacted with the media, you know, what you get out. The media craves this stuff very early on, and often what you know at that moment is not going to be entirely correct, well, then the supposition is that you must be withholding something because what you said proved to not be completely accurate. So be a little bit measured in what you send out initially because often that will change. And then the cooperation that you have with other agencies, they were very grateful of the FBI stood up and provided them a lot of resources to help out. And they're a much larger department, but all the satellite calls that they were dealing with while this was going on, because people ran from the scene to casinos blocks down the strip and grabbed security. There's an active shooter. There's an active shooter.
And then the security reported
The
that
security reported it there. So they had, in a span of about 20 minutes, like 30 other calls for active shooters at other locations.
Oh, my goodness.
Even as far away as the airport, because people fled this place, jumped the fence, and ran onto active runways at McCarran Airport. And eventually got into the terminal and shouted, "There's an active shooter, there's an active shooter." So they actually had a call at the airport.
Oh, boy.
Okay, completely overwhelming.
Thank you, Sheriff. Let's bring in Dan Scheer.
We saw as a result of the Vegas shootings that some hotels have changed their protocols for checking on guests. If they haven't seen you in 24 hours, they're just going to walk into the room regardless. And you just went over some lessons learned out of Vegas. Having heard what you have out of Vegas, are there any red flags here as far as areas that maybe we need to shore up in case something like this does happen? And we did have the FBI heavily involved in after the Gabby Gifford shooting. Mm-hmm. And so we've been kind of through something like this. But are we really prepared?
You know, Dan, I don't know that you can really be completely prepared and still live in a free society where everybody has movement and the expectation of privacy and all those things that we enjoy as Americans. I think we, you know, have some vulnerabilities to lone actor terrorist. I mean, that threat is still out there. Domestic terrorism, maybe enticed by radical ideology out of the Middle East. But, you know, things like how would you secure El Tour de Tucson, for example? If a lone actor wanted to drive a vehicle into the crowd of bicyclists, how do you prevent things like that? And I think just an awareness in the public, you know, if you see something, say something, it's not just a neat little saying, but often people see things and that doesn't look quite right and they don't say anything. I think we saw a lot of evidence in the shooting, the school shooting in Florida, where we really probably had a lot of signs there that needed to be acted on.
I want to talk about staffing levels, and I know this isn't your jurisdiction. Tucson Police Department, the Tucson Police Officers Association, announcing this week that they believe that the staffing levels for TPD are at the lowest level in three decades. And, of course, you've got a son who is part of the staff on the streets at TPD. But I'm wondering, how does this translate their problems over to Pima County Sheriff's Department? Perhaps it doesn't, or is there a correlation?
Well, you know, much of our area intersects the city of Tucson because, you know, we're a metropolitan sheriff's department, so we do interact with TPD a lot. Sometimes as we're traversing different places in the county, we're in the city and we on-site things that require a TPD response, and sometimes that's delayed, and we end up taking some of those things to help them out. I do know that when I was a captain with Tucson Police in 2008, I think we were at 1,100 sworn then. I didn't feel comfortable that I had the amount of officers that I would have liked to have had to police that area the way I thought it should be policed, and now they're much lower than that. I understand there's some fiscal issues there, but there has to be a rebuilding plan. I mean, and that's the part that I'd like to see is how do you get back? I mean, even if you decided tomorrow that you had the money to hire 250 law enforcement, it's hard to find them.
Yeah.
It really is. And then to upfit them, train them, and do all the things that you need to do, it's very difficult. And the market for employees, because unemployment is very low, our wages are not as competitive in the private market as they used to be. Changes in the pension system. It's just getting harder and harder for us to recruit and retain these people. We face that very much so at my department even. I remember, you know, several decades ago, if you were going to hire 50 police officers, you might have 1,000 applicants. Now today, if you're going to hire 50, you might have 200 applicants. So even if you don't compromise your standards, you keep the standards, you're still going further into the gene pool than you probably like to. And it's much harder to get people interested in careers in law enforcement.
How's your staffing then?
We have done well. We've pretty much held consistent over a long period, around 400 deputies right in that ballpark. So we've done a pretty good job of keeping our staffing. I'm very grateful to the Board of Supervisors, Mr. Huckleberry, for continuing to provide us the funding that we can keep our staffing level up to an area that it ought to be. I don't think any law enforcement administrator would say, I wouldn't want any more. Of course, I'd want more. I think we all would, but I think we're doing a good job of providing service to the county.
But you have cut the ranks of some of the top leaders there over the last 14 months. Were you top-heavy, or are you just using that money for bigger needs?
No, I don't think we're necessarily top-heavy, Dan. I think that my strategy was to try to redirect those savings toward compensation issues for our deputies and corrections officers. We often forget to talk about corrections officers, and that's an annoyance to me because those people do a fantastic job under very trying circumstances. An entry-level corrections officer makes just over $17 an hour. Now, I can go to GEICO and make almost $15 an hour answering the phone saying, oh, you were in a car accident? Very different environment. So I really feel the need to bring those up. I think maybe we've come a little bit too thin at the top. I think that we maybe need to do some looking at reconstituting our executive staff. Not as big as it used to be, but I think the pendulum might have swung too far.
Is the jail population where it should be?
With respect to staffing or the people in there?
Staffing, I mean, what are the numbers?
Well, we run about 1,800 people in our detention facility every day. Most people don't realize that there's that many people in there.
That's surprising. 1,800?
1,800. And what's even more surprising is the community lore, it's all these misdemeanants, all these people. And that's not really true. There's only about 6% of the people that are in the detention facility are misdemeanors. So it's not a lot of our population. And we really struggle to keep corrections officers. That's if I had the one area that is a real staffing challenge for me, it would be corrections.
Is there a full body scanner now that looks for contraband?
Yes, we've implemented that. We are the first sheriff's department in this state to use that technology. I know some of my peer sheriffs are interested and have come down and looked at it.
How accurate is it, Sheriff?
It's many times more visible than your airport scanner. I mean, you can see somebody's intestinal tract.
Oh,
literally, you can see what they had for dinner. And then things you don't think about.
Can see the cookies.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, unfortunately, Bill, without getting too graphic, I realize it is about lunchtime.
Yes.
People will put things in places they shouldn't be.
Oh, no.
And we can see those things much more clearly. And let's just leave it to everybody's imagination what I might be referring to there. But, you know, the other thing we experimented with is we had a walker, and we hid a handcuff key in the leg of a walker. And then put the walker through the scanner, you could see it clear as day.
Wow.
Are you kidding? In the walker?
Yeah, because often we'll get people in with backpacks or other property, and we can now scan those and see what's in those.
All right, time to take a break. And before we do, we have a new sponsor that we're welcoming this week. It is lunchtime, and we want to welcome everybody and urge them to go to Mona's Danish Bakery. I love this place. I've been going to Mona's probably forever, it seems like. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. The owners, Steve and Sherry, do all the baking. European baked goods, wonderful breads, pastries, cakes. I love their brownies. On and on it goes. And they're open right now for lunch. Soup and a sandwich. That sounds good right about now. The bread would be on that Mona's bread that Steve came out of the oven probably a couple of hours ago. So go to my website, buckmastershow.com, for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be right back. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Explore the world of discovery at UA Biosphere 2 with our 3 new guided tours. The Under the Glass, History, and Family Tours have been developed to provide new ways to experience the world's largest living research center, where scientists are addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. Check out these exciting new themed tours today. For a complete schedule, visit biosphere2.org.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Monday, our Monday Political Face-Off features commentators Bruce Ash and Don Jorgensen. Also, it's the Better Business Bureau monthly scam alert. All of that and more Monday during the noon hour on AM 1030 KBOI, Tucson's Voice, worldwide live listening, buckmastershow.com. Welcome back. It is our Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show, but perhaps you're listening to our re-airing, so happy Saturday morning, because the program re-airs from 7 to 8 on Saturday morning here on KVOI. Sheriff Mark Napier is our Friday focus interview today. Dan Scheer is here from the Green Valley News. Sheriff, about the Operation Stone Garden, that's the federal money that would be going to the Sheriff's Department to kind of... I guess sort of assist the Border Patrol would be a way to, good way to put that.
Well, work certainly cooperatively with Border Patrol, but we're not really in an assistance role. It's okay. More providing a greater capacity for us to be out in the rural areas where we traditionally don't get out very often, and to try to interdict the bad actors coming up through the border, whether that be drug traffickers, human traffickers, or other transnational crime threats. And that grant provides us a lot of money to do that every year. And I do believe it helps keep Pima County safer. I certainly understand there is some concerns there, and I understand that, and I appreciate that. And what I think the public really ought to take away from that whole thing is that government worked together that time. I mean, we had a difference. It was voted down. We talked about it.
Yeah, it was 3-2 vote, right? Voting it down initially.
Voting it down initially, but then we got together. We responded to concerns and had a turnaround vote that I think was in the best interest of the county, and that's how government should work. We ought to be able to resolve differences like that. I think Supervisor Valadez, I'm very appreciative of his support. I certainly appreciate the viewpoint of Supervisor Elias, and I've got to say Mr. Huckleberry was very helpful for me in helping to advance that as well.
How much money is it involved
in? About $1.4 million this year. Roughly $300,000 of that was going to go to equipment, which we use for Stone Garden deployments, but also to the benefit of the people of Pima County, because we have that equipment all the time. And this is really cool technology. It allows us to do a video downlink from our aircraft directly to web-enabled devices so that the deputy or supervisor can see live exactly what the aircraft is seeing, because the aircraft has a bigger field of view. And that could be used for all sorts of things, tracking criminals that are on the run in rural areas, finding lost people, any number of things.
So, how many aircraft do you have?
Well, we have a total of three.
Really?
But we have one that's deployed.
The Pima County Air Force.
Well, we deploy fixed wing because they're a lower cost point than rotorcraft for our patrol. And we have a really robust platform on our fixed wing that we're able to deploy at a much lower cost point than we could helicopters.
Okay. Here's Dan Scheer.
I want to take you down to Green Valley. I have a couple of numbers to throw at you. On from 2016 to 2017, the total arrests in the Green Valley area are up 61%. That number is like 191 now to 307. And then the total of citations is up 127%. And I won't get into all the numbers there, but these are significant numbers. Is there a change in strategy down there, or are we just bad? What's going on?
I'd have to drill down in the numbers. So I don't want to speak out of turn without knowing when you say arrest, what are those arrests and citations? But I have encouraged our district commanders to be more proactive, especially up in the Tucson area, because we see, and you don't have to drive very far across Tucson to see that people don't have any trepidation about getting a citation. The aggressive driving and speeding and stuff. So I've really asked them to step up traffic enforcement, because I believe that does add to a safer driving experience for us when people drive more responsibly. But I've also asked them to look at problem areas and then proactively respond to those things. Don't wait for it to come to us. Be more proactive in your approach to solving community-based problems, and try to provide those district lieutenants with more tools in their toolbox to do that. So I think it's maybe a little bit of change in philosophy and focus, but without drilling down into the numbers, I couldn't speak.
Right, and from 16 to 17, of course, we went from one administration to another, and these were total arrests for all categories. So we have definitely seen some sort of change in strategy.
Well, I think I'm just saying that your job is to police those areas. And when you come across problems, I expect you to proactively respond to those. I think that's what the community expects us to do, is to be out there proactively, not wait for the call to come in, but to understand there's problems out there and then proactively respond to them.
This prompted me to think about radar enforcement. I don't think we have it in the city of Tucson, do we, for traffic enforcement? But you have it in Pima County.
Well,
me straight here.
Yeah, we've abandoned photo radar in its entirety.
But photo radar is gone.
Yeah, but my traffic people still do run radar.
I've seen them right out here by the station.
Well, we've been trying to catch you for weeks, Bill. It's just you're evasive. You're going like a maniac up to Mona's Bakery bakery goods.
Yes, very much so. So you don't use where they take the snapshot, but the radar gun is okay.
Right. The radar gun is still...
Is that in the city, too? Do they use that or no?
I don't know. I can't speak to their capacity to still do proactive traffic enforcement.
But you are doing it with the Sheriff's Department.
Yes. In fact, our citations are up remarkably over the last year, because I expect them when you're not answering a call or doing something that, I expect you to be proactive. I expect
Get out the radar.
Or look for crime problems in your neighborhood.
Yeah. So you don't want them just sort of downtime sitting around.
Well, there's got to be a certain amount of that. I want our deputies to take care of themselves. Go get a drink, use the restroom, take care of yourself. But at the same point, I think the public expects them to be active.
Right.
And if you know there's been a couple of accidents in an area, when you're not doing something else, go there and run some traffic enforcement. Let people know we're paying attention.
Let's see what caller Greg has on his mind. Greg, go ahead. You're with Sheriff Napier.
The thanks, Bill. And Mark, it's good to hear you on the air again. Speaking of photographs, you know, what I did was I knew that it wasn't proper service when they had a picture of me making a left turn there, and they asked for a $120 fine. So I took a picture of six $20 bills, and I sent that back.
You know, it's funny enough, my daughter, my oldest daughter, got a photo radar ticket. And she came to me, and she was just mad. She goes, "Dad, this is unfair." And I said, "Well, honey, how's it unfair?" And she goes, "It just is." And I said, "Well, were you speeding, sweetheart?" She goes, "Yes, I was." And I said, "Well, how is it not fair?" And she goes, "Well, you don't understand, Dad. When a cop stops you, sometimes you can bat your eyes at him and be real nice, and you get out of a ticket, but I couldn't get out of this one."
Yeah.
I said, "Okay, sweetie, go to traffic school."
Okay. All right. Thanks, Greg, for checking in. Is it a money-making deal for the Pima County?
No, I don't want it to be an economic driver.
Right.
And that was the problem with photo radar, is it was rolled out as a way that communities could make more money.
Uh-huh.
That is not the purpose of traffic enforcement. The traffic enforcement should be directed at making us safer as we traverse our community. That's what the purpose is. So, no, I don't look at it as a moneymaker. That's the wrong-headed approach to that. What I want us to do is to have people drive responsibly, because there is some certain trepidation that you might get a citation if you're not driving correctly.
Dan, do you have anything more?
Sure. Budget aside, what's on your wish list? What do you not have that you wish you had?
I guess I worry a lot about recruitment and retention, and part of that is driven by pay, but also it's driven by demographics. The millennials find it somewhat less appealing to be in law enforcement. I worry about our correctional facility and keeping staffing up there. So I guess my wish list would be to raise the bottom pay for deputies and for corrections officers to help me have a more robust pool of applicants and to have a better prospect of retaining those folks. So I think that would be the main thing on my wish list. But overall, I guess my wish list is that they'd all be safe. I mean, there have been about 16 law enforcement officers shot in the line of duty already this year. And every night I go to bed, I just worry about these young people so much. I worry about my son. He's on duty right now. But the dangers they're facing out there are very real. And I just pray every night that they go home to their family safely.
Have you been to that memorial in Washington?
I have, Bill. I was there about a month ago, and I visited the engraving of some people that I had in.
We have local people on the...
Oh, absolutely. I specifically went and... paid my respects to John Blazer. I was with him right before he got killed. He was a DPS officer killed in 1990. Paid my respects to Kevin Barleycorn, who was also killed in August of 1990. He was a U of A police officer.
Yeah, I remember that incident.
And I was present at that. And then, of course, Patrick Hardesty and Eric Height.
Mm-hmm.
And also one of my officers on the south side, his son named Tate Lynch, was killed in Casa Grande in a training accident. So every time I go to Washington, D.C., I go to the wall and I pay my respects to those five that I knew personally, or was personally involved in, but there are too many names on that wall,
yeah.
And we're adding too many every year.
All right, well, I'm out of time, but I'm the host of the program, so I'm going to ask one more question, because you said something that caught my attention about this career of law enforcement seems not to be so appealing to millennials, to younger people. What is your speculation on why that might be?
There are a lot of things. It's a generational thing. I mean, us as baby boomers, I would give up a dollar an hour for security. And millennials are looking for fulfillment and looking for a challenge and a sense of purpose. It's just a different hiring group. I think when you have NFL football players that kneel during the national anthem in protest of that profession, I don't think that helps recruitment. I just don't. And certainly all the news about the dangers, the ambushes. My own son said, "Dad, I knew I could lose my life in performance of my duty, and I accept that, but I never signed up to be hunted like an animal." And as a father, that'll set you back on your heels. And that's the reality, is that a lot of these are ambushes. And, you know, how much do you have to pay somebody, I mean, to do that?
Yeah.
It sets me back. And I just pray for these kids every day, that all of them go home safe to their families and that they can enjoy the long career that I've been blessed to enjoy.
All right. Amen. We'll leave it right there. Sheriff Napier, always a pleasure to see you, sir.
Bill.
Thank you very much. Dan Shear sticks around. And now Dylan Smith is in the house, and Dylan will be coming on as we do our roundtable portion of the hour. But first, let's hear from the fine people who make this program possible. Be right back. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
For almost 40 years, the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has worked with individuals, families, businesses, and nonprofits to create a stronger community. We connect you with the causes you care about, transforming your vision for our community into meaningful, charitable impact. Make a difference now and forever. Please visit cfsaz.org or call 520-777-0800 to learn more about the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
It's a land and cruise vacation sale at Bon Voyage Travel. Plan your dream vacation now and save big, up to 65%. Alaska, Hawaii, Europe, South America, the Caribbean, pick your perfect destination. Bon Voyage Travel will create your exclusive getaway that includes extra perks and bonuses you won't find anywhere else. Call Bon Voyage Travel today or visit bvtravel.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River Walk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. An Indian food lover's paradise awaits at Indian Twist, located at the southwest corner of Swan and Camp Lowell, with a varied and extensive menu including vegetarian options and many dishes prepared in the tandoor oven. Indian Twist offers takeout and buffet lunch daily, with dinner served family style. The full bar features Indian beers on tap. Indian Twist, Swan and Camp Lowell, and IndianTwistAZ.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Now it is our roundtable portion. This is when we talk with local news people, and one of the local news people who's a contributor to the program, we're delighted he is Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com. Hi, Dylan.
Hey, how you doing? That's nice. Some funky bumper music you got leading into the roundtable here. That's a good baseline.
I believe it is from Steely Dan. Yes, it is from Steely Dan. Dan Scheer is here, speaking of Dan, from the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. I'm trying to pronounce Sahorita better.
Yeah,
I'm still working.
How do you pronounce it, Dan?
Sahorita.
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 H is silent.
Sahorita.
Yeah, close.
Okay.
Sahorita.
There you go. Sahorita. Hey, Dylan.
Opposed to lovely Rita Meter.
Yeah. Big news yesterday, and unfortunately not good news for our economy. It's always bad news when folks are going to lose their job, and these are pretty high-paying jobs. Rockwell Collins, they make these high-end airplane seating compartments, like for first class, where you get a whole bed and the whole deal.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been in one of those. I know I've never been in one of those, because that would probably be a distinct memory.
I think this is a difference, too, between what is in business class with the flat, you know, the lie flat seat.
These are your own cabins. Personal little compartments, like an old fashioned train car.
No, haven't done that. Yeah. Would like to someday, but so anyway, that's bad news. Over 400 people, and I'm a little intrigued, Dylan, about this, because the initial release seemed to have come that that Rockwell Collins sent out to their suppliers, and that's kind of how it all developed.
Well, according to a company spokesman who I was able to nail down on a few of the details yesterday. He wasn't entirely talkative about the situation, but he said that they informed the employees at the plant here on February 28th before they sent out that release to the suppliers that they would be closing up shop here.
Because
it was just yesterday that word filtered out to those of us in the press, and we were able to start making some calls to the company and try and get the number of people who would be affected, whether they were actually entirely closing down here or just throttling back. And they are closing. They're completely ending production here in Tucson. And it seems like they'll end up moving these jobs to the Philippines. They've done that in some other instances. They have a larger operation in North Carolina where they've been sending jobs from there, ceasing production of the items there and shipping them overseas.
Dan, this is our first time to talk with Dylan about the debate that he hosted down in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, he moderated the Congressional District 2 Democrats. There were six of them, and I told him beforehand, I said, let's try to get a little bit of light between some of these people because they all sound the same. This was actually very interesting. He pushed them on certain issues, Medicare being one of them, and I walked away feeling like, okay, I hadn't wasted a Sunday afternoon. So good job, Dylan.
Thank you for the ringing endorsement. Well, that was my intent, to try and, certainly candidates want to stick to their talking points, want to get their message out, but, peel at least a couple layers of that onion and get them to maybe talk a little bit more about some specifics rather than slogans. And I think we saw, a little bit of difference between them, and that'll help people make their decision who they want to support.
And I think I saw something that I had seen in a previous debate that Jim Nintzel actually had moderated, and that is that Ann Kirkpatrick isn't that well-liked, quite honestly. Or there is a lukewarm reception for her, even at Quail Creek a couple of weeks ago. And then after the forum was over, she reversed herself on a couple of positions. And so I don't know whether that was intentional because she didn't want to have to deal with the blowback in front of, over 400 people who were there, or whether she really hadn't understood your question.
First off, to the issue of her being liked, when you have supporters for six candidates in a room and she's the front runner, the rest of them are trying to knock her off her pedestal.
Hoot and holler,
yes,
right?
She's going to have
five against
the worst reaction from the room just by virtue of numbers.
But she was by far the most conservative of the six. Can we say that?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And I think that
that's
was
where
it,
she
too.
Is. And you have everybody else in the field somewhere to the left of Kirkpatrick, I think, is a fair assessment. Everybody's kind of got their differing takes on certain issues, but she's probably the most centrist, the most Blue Dog, although she's actually never been a member of the Blue Dog Caucus.
Is she the most electable?
Well, that would certainly depend on who you talk to. You know, CD2 is not CD3, certainly. I think you need a more measured
moderate
candidate to... You basically have a 30-30-30 split in CD2 between Democrats, non-party voters, independents, they like to call themselves, and Republicans. And you need to get a decent chunk of those independents, whether you are the Democrat or the Republican in the race.
So getting back to what Dan was saying, not well-liked among the people that come to these.
And that's another very important
question.
Very important.
It's a self-selecting audience.
Yes.
Exactly. And you're talking the people who are going to be rabid, fairly hardcore, know the issues, and they were calling her out on them almost before she opened her mouth on a couple of them. So,
was gun control one of them?
It was certainly a big issue, and he hammered away at it.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that prompted some crowd reaction. There were a couple of the answers that Kirkpatrick gave that she can't really say changed, clarified. Well, not a complete reversal of course, really. One, she said she didn't really understand how she was supposed to answer during, another was her trying to talk through her various stances on copper mining. You know, she was a big proponent of the mine in Oak Flat, helped work for the land swap to make that possible. Although she likes to talk about how she ensured that there were, you know, environmental reviews and, some hurdles put on that. But down here in southern Arizona, Democrats do not like the Rosemont mine. So she's had to sort of modify how she talks about copper mining, mm-hmm. going from promoting jobs to promoting the environment. Down here.
And then people are still throwing in her back at her that in 2012, that election cycle, the NRA had her as an A, I guess, and then now they have her as a D on gun control. She definitely has flopped, and she kind of laid that out for us, how her thinking has changed and everything. Whether you believe her or not is one thing. There are some people, though, who will not forgive her for having that A rating from the NRA. So so you're dealing with a lot of people.
I think a
lot
of those folks who won't forgive Kirkpatrick for having an A rating for the NRA might also be Bernie Sanders supporters.
Yeah,
which is a bit ironic. Sanders having gotten plenty of high ratings from the NRA.
Right. It was quite an audience, and it was very interesting to sit out there and just listen to a lot of.
And
this
of course, it all
worthwhile.
Will come down in the end to name recognition.
Sure.
And
name recognition, money, the vote being split up amongst all of these progressive candidates to one degree or another.
And I'll tell you this. I told someone, I said, what I saw, though, on that stage was something that you don't see real often, despite what we've just been talking about. There was honest, I felt, unity among these six people. They will back the nominee.
They will.
Going forward. And I think that they'll, to the point where they would, I don't know if they'll be on the trail for him or not, but I sensed a unity up there that you don't often get in these types of primaries.
No. Of course, it's still... early. Things have the chance to get a whole lot thornier in the months leading up to August yet.
And does everyone have their signatures other than Barbara Cherry, who I know does not because she was on the show a couple of weeks ago and was really worried about it?
I think probably everyone else has their sigs in hand. It takes a certain number of signatures, valid signatures on petitions
to
get on the
ballot. And you can only sign once.
And you can only sign once, so they are kind of in a... race to, you know, block out the other candidates by getting people to sign theirs first. And it's a good way to make people feel like they have bought into your campaign to line these supporters up early. Even if you are, you know, have well over the number of signatures that you need, you're still going to be out there shaking hands and talking to people.
We do our monthly scam alert from the Better Business Bureau. We've got one coming up on Monday. And Dan, you had your own situation with a scam down in your neck of the woods. This one, I guess you could call it a love scam.
I guess, but there wasn't really much love in it. Turns out this 75-year-old woman was flattered that a man 21 years her junior was very, very interested in her. And he, she had hired him to come put in a couple of ceiling fans, and after about a month noticed that they weren't in, and she wanted to believe the man was in love with her. It's really what it amounted to. And Bill, you know what? What more do we want than to be loved? And he didn't love her. I loved her money.
Are we talking big money here?
$25,000 is probably the end result from this.
Ooh,
and she she contacted. Yeah, she contacted me and said, "Look, this happened to me. I've called the scam squad, which is our sheriff's auxiliary volunteer, and they're going to kind of hold my hand through a couple of things." And I said, "Look. We wouldn't use your name, but this happens frequently. Would you allow us to do a story on you?" And she did. And she really opened up to us. And again, this is someone who was just taken in by somebody who, on top of everything else, was a drug addict. And that's where all the money was going. And he, of course, moved into her house. And then she has to evict him from there. And it was real, real messy. So this was an unfortunate situation. But again, you can understand how she got there. Now, in retrospect, she's saying common sense would have been, oh my gosh, you know, run from this person. Her child had told her, "Mom, this guy's scamming you." But she didn't want to hear it, Bill, because her heart was telling her something different.
Wow. She was 75.
Good for her for talking with you.
75. And who? How old was the man?
54.
54. And he actually moved in?
Yes, moved in, and it was, we got a lot of details we're not going to share.
Oh, no.
But
no,
it was, she gave us everything, baby, I'll tell you that. And you know what? What you said, Dylan, is exactly right. Good for her for talking to us, because people in these situations are often embarrassed and mortified, and they don't want it. But she reached out to me, and she was more than willing to do it because she wants to prevent it in the future.
Well, that's wonderful. That's good. And hopefully save someone else a lot of heartaches.
And some money.
Yeah. Okay, yes. Dylan. Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com. Where can people find out more about you? You are a nonprofit organization.
Indeed. TucsonSentinel.com is your local independent nonprofit news source, and we really depend on local small businesses and local individual donors to keep us going along, digging into things, trying to tell the stories that too often go untold about this city.
What if someone only has 10, 20 bucks to throw at you?
That would be wonderful. We're appreciative of, whether somebody's given us $5 or $5,000, we're very much appreciative of the support.
All right. What's coming up in the paper in Green Valley?
Oh boy, we have the all of March is the senior games, and so we're going to all of these events. And I've never been to so many Canasta, tournament.
Yes,
they actually, and it's competitive.
Oh,
Bill,
don't
through a Canasta.
Right. Oh yeah, we got everything going on. So we're covering it and having photos in every issue.
Oh good. All right, Dan Scheer and Dylan Smith. Hope you both have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot. We'll be right back. The Humane Society of Southern Arizona is moving to 635 West Roger Road. Our new home is almost done. We'll have a pet-friendly cafe, awesomely cool cat habitats, lots of play yards for our dogs, and a state-of-the-art clinic, and much more. We're caring for your new best friend until you find them at the Humane Society of Southern Arizona. Come visit us at 635 West Roger Road this spring and fall in love all over again. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improved regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in T-U-S. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
For almost 40 years, the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has worked with individuals, families, businesses, and nonprofits to create a stronger community. We connect you with the causes you care about, transforming your vision for our community into meaningful, charitable impact. Make a difference now and forever. Please visit cfsaz.org or call 520-777-0800 to learn more about the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona.
Explore the world of discovery at UA Biosphere 2 with our three new guided tours. The Under the Glass, History, and Family Tours have been developed to provide new ways to experience the world's largest living research center, where scientists are addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. Check out these exciting new themed tours today. For a complete schedule, visit biosphere2.org.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
All right, Weekend Watch with Matt Russell is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, which makes a great weekend getaway. It's only a 3-hour drive over to Silver City, and there's so much to do in a relaxing, lovely environment. The best way to get started is to visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of the many very fine places to stay and great recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome now Inside Tucson business, food, and beverage columnist, Mr. Matt Russell. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Bill, what a beautiful Friday. In fact, I'm going to tell my clients that Bill Buckmaster has given me the rest of the day off. I think they'll understand.
Oh, they will understand. All of those afternoon meetings canceled. Getting ready. Getting ready for the 10th annual Tucson Festival of Books. People think about the literary end, but what about the culinary end?
Absolutely. It's the fourth largest book festival in the country, and you know me, Bill. I'm going to be hanging out at the culinary stage like I always do. The lineup this year includes self-described pastry nerd Deborah Nash, Gonzalo Guzman, Mr. Napolito himself, and the vegetable whisperer, Joshua McFadden. Now, check this out. The world-famous pizza man, Chris Bianco, who we all know with Bianco Pizza, he's going to be speaking on Saturday at 11:30 at a session that I'll be moderating. It's the Tucson Festival of Books all day tomorrow and Sunday on the U of A campus. Look for me at the culinary stage.
Yeah, I can't think of a better person to moderate a panel on food than Matt Russell, for sure. And if that wasn't enough this weekend, I understand it's second Saturday downtown.
It is, and I always look forward to heading downtown. Second Saturday of every month. And tomorrow they're going to have some fun things planned, like the Art After Dark program at the Children's Museum and a live performance by, are you ready?
Yeah.
The Tortolita Gut Pluckers.
The Gut Pluckers are back? Oh, my goodness.
The Gut Pluckers are back at Borderlands. And our good friends at Maynard's, they're going to be extending their happy hour until 8 o'clock, which means two more hours of special pricing on those great Maynard's Manhattans. this second Saturday sounds like one for the books.
But. Well, there's always room for a wine festival as well.
Yeah, and Keith Joshua Vineyards down in Elgin, they're going to be hosting their annual Southeast Arizona Wine Growers Festival, 11 to 5 tomorrow and Sunday. This two-day event is going to feature wines from nearly 20 wineries from across the Grand Canyon State. Only $30 at the door. You can sample along a spectrum of adult grape juice and enjoy some live music from local artists. And there's going to be some food on hand, including Russell Barbecue. You can't make this up. And with a name like Russell, it's got to be good, Bill. Wine, music, and food in the great outdoors. It's this weekend.
Oh, thank you. Delivering the goods for us on Weekend Watch. Have a great weekend, Matt Russell.
Right back at you, Bill. Thanks.
All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our daily hour during the week. Our original theme music, courtesy of our friend Christophan, the fine young German composer. Thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my assistant. My thanks to the team here at KVOI, our operations manager, Ray Allen, who also is my producer and engineer Friday through Thursday. Mr. Tom Fairbanks, my producer engineer on Friday. Tom always does a great job for us, as does Ray. And production manager, funny man, Jerry Cross. This guy is a bundle when it comes to laughs, but he's also a great production guy. The ladies up front, thank you for all of your service. Mr. and Mrs. Martin, the owners of our locally operated and owned Tucson Radio Group. All of us wish you a safe and pleasant weekend. Have fun.